The date is December 18th, 1987, and we're watching Asterix, Batteries Not Included. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
I think that asterix is important. They definitely like to make sure it's displayed. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Energizer to my dearest cell.
Hello, I'm going and go. I'm Colin Stewart.
And I was tempted to introduce you as the Australian guy that says oi, because those were the Energizer commercials that were out at the same time. But I'm like, I'm sure there might be like two people out there that understand that reference, and yeah, and you weren't one of them.
I was not going to be one of them.
Well, this week we decided that with a movie featuring a character named Frank and an actor named Frank with Frank McRae, well, our podcast needed to bring in our very own Frank, so we're welcoming back Mr. Frank Driscoll. Hi, Frank. How's it going, man?
Hi, Sean. Hi, Colin. I'm doing well. It's great to be back on the show, as always. You know how much I love coming on here.
Absolutely.
And thanks again for having me.
Right on. And when I reached out to you, you have never seen this movie before now, correct?
No. In fact, I've never even heard of it until when you said. So, completely fresh.
Right on. Right on. Well, this week we are looking back at December 1987 when the movies in theaters were Leonard Part 6, which is a Bill Cosby classic, Overboard, Wall Street, Throw Mama from the Train. It was a good month. And, of course, our movie for today, Asterix, Batteries Not Included, which earned $65 million on a $25 million budget.
And, of course, this movie is only 1 year younger than me. So, spoilers will be aplenty. If you do not want this movie to be spoiled for you, like, say, an axe to your robotic face.
That's right.
Then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Yes, I was actually very protective of the spoiling this movie for Frank because he had not seen it before, that I'm like, you know what? You might not even want to read anything about the plot. Go into it fresh, because that might be the way to do this. Just don't know anything about it at all. So, because here's the tagline. The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is only one, and it's vague. Five ordinary people needed a miracle. Then one night, Faye Riley left the window open. There's so much there, right?
Yes.
So many different things.
Interesting.
And your top five choices were probably not little flying saucers, correct?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe, you know, someone stole her apple pie or some sort of bird of prey came in.
Yeah. A ghost? I don't know.
But angels.
Angels, exactly. Mm-hmm. Angels were big in the 80s. Angels in the outfield and all that sort of stuff. But they may not. This isn't a very good description of the movie. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
All right. Frank and Faye Riley run a diner and manage an apartment building in an impoverished part of New York City. When a developer moves in and starts knocking down all the buildings around them in order to gentrify the area, they hire local thug Carlos to intimidate the couple and their tenants into vacating the property so it can be demolished. When offering money doesn't work, Carlos resorts to vandalism and assault. Eventually, some of the tenants decide to move, leaving behind Frank, Faye, struggling artist Mason, pregnant and abandoned Marissa, and caretaker and ex-boxer Harry. If the pressures of the developer weren't enough, Frank must also contend with Faye's worsening dementia. Garth Brooks once saying that some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers, but fortunately for Frank, after seeking help from the good Lord, his prayers are answered by a couple of flying robot aliens looking for a place to charge and reproduce. The two robots also have a penchant for fixing things and begin to fix the broken-down building faster than Carlos can vandalize it. With the robotic friends on the team, the tide turns in the favor of the Rileys and their tenants, who band together into one big family. Meanwhile, the robots do the deed and birth three baby robots. Mason and Marissa begin to fall in love, and we discover the sad truth behind Frank and Faye's son, Bobby. Carlos tries one more tactic to take out the building's water and power, but gets scared off by the robots, but not before taking one out with an axe. After his failure, the developer decides to escalate the matter and hires an arsonist to blow the building up. Carlos still tries to get in on this action, and good thing he did, because Faye was still in the building, and even though he's responsible for burning the place down, he also saves her from certain death. After the rest of the group says goodbye to the robots, who are still pissed at humanity over the axe thing, they return to find their home in ruins. They all go to the hospital with Faye, except Harry, who sits on the stoop in mourning until a miracle happens. The robots return in force, not to destroy all humans, but to rebuild the apartment building from the ground up. In the end, the developer realizes they can't win and just builds around the building while the residents live happily ever after.
Right there you go.
Yeah. Got some Garth Brooks in there. Futurama. Yeah.
Looking back at it, I'm like, what the heck did I just sit through?
Yeah. But see, okay, so for me, going back with Batteries Not Included, this is one that I just had this craving to watch. I don't know why. It was one of those movies, though, from my childhood that I just found so sweet. And I know I've discussed on the show before that I used to like getting the novellas for movies that would come out, you know, which were always these cheap little paperback thrown together things that followed the plot of the movie. Just a, you know, cheap little tie-in book. And so I had a Harry and the Hendersons one, and one of them was a Batteries Not Included. And so I used to just love the story. I thought it was a sweet little story. And so this was one that it's a hidden gem. I always think, you know, a lot of people don't know this movie. And because I had this craving to watch it, I'm like, more people need to know about this movie. Let me go see if I can get it, you know, broadcast out to dozens of people on the internet who will actually be interested in this episode. But at least I can bring my friends Frank and Colin along on this journey. So, Frank, no experience with Batteries Not Included. Hadn't even heard of it?
No, not even once.
Okay. So we won't even bother going into your history anymore. Colin, what about you? Batteries Not Included. Had you even heard of it other than maybe the couple of times I had mentioned it on the show?
So a funny thing for me with Batteries Not Included is I had heard of it, but then over the course of this podcast, we watched the movie I thought was Batteries Not Included, but that movie was actually called Short Circuit.
Okay.
So then I realized I've never seen this movie ever.
All right. Okay.
And had no idea what it was or what it was about.
Okay. Now, with the Jessica Tandy, Hume Cronin team up, they did that several times in their careers. Are you guys familiar with Cocoon? Have either of you seen Cocoon?
No. I haven't, no.
Okay. Just wondering. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's because it's them again, it's kind of a spiritual sort of, you know, but that one's aliens, not robots. Well, okay, let's just get right into Batteries Not Included, directed by Matthew Robbins, who really, this is arguably probably his biggest directing project. He's mostly a writer. Produced by Ronald L. Schwary, but shout out to the executive producer Dream Team of Marshall, Kennedy, and Spielberg. I think those kids are going to make it someday. And it's written by Mick Garris. There's a lot of writers on this, which is usually a bad sign. Mick Garris, who gets the story credit. Brad Bird, who is like Mr. Pixar. Yeah, he's on there. Matthew Robbins, the director. Brett Maddock and S.S. Wilson. Yeah, so there's also a boat writing on this. And we open this movie. Oh, come on. I dropped that in there. I don't even get a chuckle from anyone.
I smirked. You saw. No.
I thought that was clever. I thought that was a good one. But yeah, so we opened this up on 80s Photoshop with all the pictures of young Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy. You know, but we, the one thing I love about this movie is they just kind of, you know, right off the bat who these people were, and then they pull back and you just see what the world around them is now. And it just, it gets you into it immediately that you all of a sudden kind of feel these people's lives. So, I mean, seeing this for the first time, you know, and what are first impressions? I want to get some first impressions from you guys that you are like, were you, what is Sean making me watch here? Or were you intrigued right off the bat with this batty little old lady with her old lady cart just, you know, going down the sidewalk through all the rubble and whatnot?
Yeah, you know, I did notice the pictures. I was actually kind of impressed with the technology they had back then to make it look like, well, yeah. And then I kind of forgot that Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy were actually a married couple. And then that's when I remembered, oh, that explains why they have so many pictures together. Yeah. And I did love the part when she came into the restaurant afterward saying, somebody's got to do the marketing.
That's right.
I'm like, that's dedication.
Now, being in a grocery store field with your career, I'm sure you have probably seen this woman walking around your store before. I know I've had her on my bus.
Yeah, I think for my first impressions, I was thrown off. Maybe this is ageist of me, but I was thrown off by the idea that, like, our main protagonists were going to be an elderly couple. I was where's my young, like, Steve Guttenberg or whatever, like.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't until Dennis shows up, or sorry, Mason, I mean, the actor's name is Dennis Boutsikaris. So that's as Greek as you can get. Yeah. When Mason shows up, you're like, oh, there he is. They just buried the lead with the old people, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, like it was weird because I kept expecting him to kind of take over the narrative.
Yeah.
And then probably halfway through, or like, yeah, not half, like maybe like a quarter of the way through, I was like, oh, like, no, it's these guys are our guys.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, actually.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess at least for your sake, they wrote the other old couple out immediately. You know, sent them off to New Jersey for the old folks home. You're like, okay, well, at least there's not two sets of old people. This isn't Willy Wonka.
Yeah. But they're actually up and about.
Yeah.
So that's a brownie point.
I was also kind of like a little thrown off by the character of Harry. And just, I don't know. Sometimes when I watch it, like, I'm just like a little bit. Like, the roles for, like, black people in the 80s, it's like they always, like, find these ex-football players and then just make them absolute dummies. And I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
that kind of, it rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
But. Yeah, that's our Frank for the movie. I mean, we saw him before way back in episode 2 in The Wizard. Frank McCray, yeah, he was the truck driver in that one. Wasn't his name Harry in that?
Right,
actually?
Yeah, and he plays like almost the same guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's a little more brain dead in this. He's a little more, you know, like a few too many blows to the head over the years is what we're going for here. I think we're going for sports injured. Like it's almost like how many different kinds of mental disorders or illnesses or anything like that can we highlight? Okay, this is the sports injury. This is the woman that's going through like a PTSD, you know, dementia thing over her son. You know, we've got the woman that's kind of in the abandoned relationship, not abusive relationship, you know, all this, you know, we're exploring a lot of different psychological things in this movie. It's a very contained story in the grand scheme of things, which is one of the things I think I've always loved about it, is it's not a lot of big set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the dementia thing threw me off a little bit. That was like, I don't know. I was just like, it's just so in a way, like, not what I expected from this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, not that this movie isn't, like, a happy-go-lucky, like, you know, heartwarming movie, but it's, like, that added piece of, like, the dementia. It's just hard to, like...
Did it get too real for you?
Yeah, it got too real for me. Like, it was just kind of sad, and then even by the end, it's, like... Sure, they go back to their house, but, like, I don't know. Like, you just know that situation isn't ending well. That whole situation is sad no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, and we do look at, you know, you brought him up just a second ago with the character of Harry, where, yeah, I see what you mean about, okay, let's cast just the big black dummy in the basement sort of thing. But I think he's a great character. Right, and he's one of the ones that has growth. Like, he comes out of his shell. He's a character that has himself into seclusion, and he comes out of his shell because he's training the one baby and all that sort of thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
he does a lot with, you know, with very little dialogue.
Right,
he's Robot Jesus.
Robot Jesus, we could go a little bit more classic literature and say, like, he's, you know, of Mice and Men, he's Lenny, you know, he's like,
yeah, no, I was gonna say he's reminds me of Lenny.
That would have been an interesting twist in the movie if he accidentally killed the little robot instead of bringing it back to life.
Oh god,
because he was too much of a
hand just crushed it to death. He loved it too much.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, so then, yeah, so we meet the old people first, and then we meet Marissa, the pregnant Spanish lady upstairs. And she, of course, is being hassled because this is a terrible neighborhood. I was noticing, though, that Carlos, like, because all these guys are going around and they're trying to hand out these eviction notices, like the money to get everybody out of the building. Don't you find that this Carlos guy's got kind of a Rami Malek thing going on? Did either of you get that from him? Yeah,
I could see that.
Now that you mention it, yes.
But yeah, we meet Maria, we meet Carlos, and, like, we're just brought into what's going on in this building pretty fast.
Yes.
I found it odd, like, what is the plan of the developer? Like, clearly they haven't bought this. Like, wouldn't you want to buy the building?
Before you start, like, breaking ground on everything else?
Yeah, or the way they present it is, like, Carlos can just go and bribe people to move out and make people not want to live there.
Yeah.
And then the developer, like, can basically just, like, go roll over it as if it's an abandoned building. But, and I mean, I would be curious to know, like, it seems like the way the project looks in the end, it seems like a multi-million dollar thing they're putting up. So, like, I find it hard to believe that Frank and Faye wouldn't have been offered some major coin to sell this place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in movies, the story is almost the opposite, where it's like, you know, the person sells the building, and then they try to force all the tenants out.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of odd. Wasn't really until I started reading about it that I even realized that Frank and Faye owned the building as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because that whole part of it kind of seemed weird to me. I was like, why wouldn't they just take the money and go, like...
Even all these years later, I never even realized that. I thought they just owned the diner. I didn't realize they owned the whole building. So, I mean, you just even shed some light on something for me. One thing I find hilarious about the developer, though, is when they actually go to the office and he's got that model building, they've actually gone to the trouble of constructing a little, you know, copy of the Riley Diner to put down there, with a section they can remove out of their model until these people sell. Like, it's like, so your model builder also knew that this building was going to be a problem, that he's like, okay, I'm going to put in this contingency just in case you want to show people what the real progress of, like, I just, that was one of the things that I found absolutely goofy, was that, yeah, they had a model that had this building in there.
Yeah. It also seems that, like, when you see the finished product, that just doesn't look like a nice place to live anymore. No. Like, I don't know that I would want to live there. It just looks super busy. It's probably so loud. So many people all over the place. I mean, I guess right. For the diner, it's probably great business, but...
Yeah.
Man.
Well, yeah, I mean, they start getting all the construction workers' business even. Right? It starts right. There yes. For them. They start thriving. Yeah.
It was funny that one construction worker, I think the one that, like, really the only one that talks, like, the one who gets his burger stolen from him and the one that, like, won't tells the guy to, like, shove off until Harry's done warning. That guy reminded me of Frank.
Yeah.
And then it made me, I was like, maybe Frank has a career in construction ahead of him. I think you just need to like be a little bit more crass and salty, and then you can pull it off.
You never know.
So I always wonder with movies like this, when it comes to the set designers and everything, what order do they film things in? Like, do they have the nicest diner first and film all those scenes out and then crap it up a bit and film those out and then come in and smash it out? That's got to be how they do it, right? They go from best to worst?
I would assume. I mean, especially with all the mess and having to rebuild it again. Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, that sounds very... smart.
Yeah, after trying to bribe everyone off, right, like Carlos just goes into the diner and just fucks that place up. I mean, at one point, like, there's got to be some laws that they're breaking, but yeah. Like, I don't understand.
Call the police and like, be like, hey, get a restraining order over here.
Yeah, especially if you're like, you know, like a sweet little elderly couple. Like, you know, like, don't you think that this, the cops might come out for these guys? They're being hassled. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, this whole building of tenants, it's just... I don't understand the fight, I guess. That might be what part of it is it's like, ugh.
Well, they probably think that diner's been there 60 years. What? They must have insurance.
Yeah.
You know? Pay for all the plates and glass and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clear that it's going to be sabotage when they try to blow the building up at one point. Like, I mean, that's...
Yeah. Yeah.
You should have a paper trail with the police so that they know that, hey, this is, you know, this is arson. These are the guys responsible. I don't know.
Yes.
So we end up meeting the artist and his toxic relationship. His girlfriend decides to take off and he throws all his art out the window. So all this stuff is going on, people are leaving, and finally Faye, she makes her plea to the heavens for her miracle. So, okay, so what did you think when when little flying saucers showed up to...
Isn't it Harry that prays?
Yes.
Well, he prays too. Oh,
wait, did okay. Frank? I thought it was Frank. That...
Yeah, Frank,
it
sorry.
It is Frank,
yeah.
Sorry. You know, I'm thrown off by the tagline. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because Faye leaves the window open. I guess he puts her to bed, and then he has his meltdown in the kitchen, throwing all his dishes around. Yeah. But yeah, he prays to the heavens, and so, yeah, little spaceships show up.
Yeah, I'll let Frank take.
Frank can have the first word on this.
You sure about that? No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Well, it was unexpected, not what I assumed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I figured maybe there'd be something coming out of it, like an alien being, but no, the actual robotic thing itself is the thing.
Yeah, and they even give you that psych-out moment, because they drop the back, like you think a little alien's going to walk out of there, and it's the plug.
Yes, exactly. throws you off.
Throws you off. Yeah.
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 Yeah, I thought it was bizarre.
Yeah, we get some reverse ET though. We get the little old lady that's finding the alien in the junk heap, rather than the, you know, girl finding the little monster in the stuffed animals.
Mm-hmm. I also just like there's no explanation. This is what I was thinking. Where did they come from? Did they come in a larger saucer ship? Because I'm just thinking, there's no way that a craft, in my opinion, that small could survive in, like, you know, deep space for like a long distance travel in deep space and entering into the atmosphere.
Yeah, it may not even make it through the atmosphere. Like, is just what I was going to say. If you can break it with an axe, that thing's not surviving that heat.
Yeah, like they seem homemade almost. Like, it's weird to me that they're even aliens.
Yeah.
And I just thought the fact that we don't get to see, like, their backstory, like, even if there's a scene that showed, like, I don't know, some ship crashing in, like, the forest or something, and then these things come out and, oh, they need to figure out life. But it's like, and why, like, is there a reason why they specifically, just because the window was left open?
Yeah, why not?
And there was no better place to get power from, like, say, a power line or, like, a neon sign or, I don't know, like anywhere other than an outlet.
Yeah, they knew that they needed them. I don't know. I mean, maybe this is the origin story of the Transformers. These were the scout ships sent from Cybertron to see. No? Colin doesn't want to take that ride with me?
Maybe. I do think the movie would have been better if it ended with just a full-blown, like, invasion. But still.
Yeah. Well, everything's being rebooted these days. I mean, you know, 35 years later, there might be room for a little bit of reboot. And this time they're back and they're mad.
I actually think Batteries Not Included would be a good movie to remake.
But I think...
Yeah, I don't know who, like, I would be curious to know in the planning of this movie whose idea it was for the flying saucers and why they decided to go with something so lame.
Well, does that feel like the Brad Bird of it all? That's Wally.
Oh, there you go.
Because, I mean, we also got there a love story here, y'all. Right? Like,
yes.
And we end up with, like, a whole, like, courtship of these robots and, you know, this is a Valentine's Day episode is what this is.
I guess now that you mentioned Wally, I suppose it makes a little bit more sense.
Right?
But still.
You just still don't buy them surviving the vacuum of space for that long.
I really don't buy that. But I also just
from a story standpoint, I don't like it when things just show up and I'm just supposed to be like, okay, let's go. Like, I don't know. I need some explanation.
They're robot you know, Peter Pans. I mean, come on. Childhood stories, things just show up. It's a miracle. You just have to lean into the miracle.
It's too bad they couldn't cure Faye's dementia.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
But see, she seems to get better. So now, is it is it just a PTSD thing that she has, or is it full blown dementia? Because she eventually
I don't think she does get better. I think there's just like a time where it's like less sad. Like, because even, like, you don't really even understand the whole Billy thing until, like, kind of she has her, like, freak out at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But even when she's talking to Carlos at the diner, like, that scene isn't sad. Like, she's pretty, you just think, oh, look at this weird old lady.
Yeah. You know, and then they balance that out with showing her up on the roof, you know, throwing little bits of metal into the chicken coop.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, in the morning, because the robots show up, everything is repaired.
I know that, like, electricity in Alberta is a little bit crazy these days. I don't know how it is for you in California, Frank, but I'd be curious to know, like how much, like, what is the power bill over, like, the little time that these aliens are with them? Like, how much electricity are they taking out each time they plug in?
It would be a lot around here. Let me tell you that. The electric company around here can get very, very hectic at times. Like, for example, the wildfires have been getting really bad. So much
All
so
right.
they don't care where you live or what you need to survive. They'll just turn your power off.
Oh.
Without telling you first.
A heads up before we start recording would have been nice.
It's not wildfire season, don't worry. But I've seen it firsthand. Like our power for some reason was fine, but literally you look down the street and six houses are out. So
Oh, weird.
I don't know what the heck's up with our house.
Yeah.
I guess we're not in the fire zone, but they are down the street.
Interesting.
The fire maps are weird these days. I don't know. I'll
Yeah.
have to ask my brother. He's trying to be a fireman. Hopefully, he can figure that out for me. It's all inside jobs. No. But
Well, yeah, I mean, the amount of electricity in this movie, I mean, first of all, you gotta wonder whether when the robots finally find Times Square that they're like, what were we thinking going to that demolished neighborhood? This is where the juice is. But a lot of people almost die in this movie. Like, a couple people get, like, fried pretty hard that you would think that there would be more dead bodies in this movie. Just two, like Carlos and is it Mason? I think they're both the ones that both get electrocuted in the chicken coop.
Right.
Come out with big old hair and
Yes, a classic electrocution bit.
yeah. I mean, maybe they were invading. They just had to build their army on Earth very slowly. Out of Pepsi
Yeah,
cans.
I mean, I feel like Carl, like, because doesn't Carlos gets like full on, like it seems like he's getting maybe getting like a, like a space enema or whatnot, like a
Anal probe.
Comes out with shredded pants. Yeah,
Yeah.
something went down in there.
Hey, why do you
Yeah.
think he screams so hard? I mean, shoot.
Right. Yeah.
It probably took his liver out too, for God's sake. I mean, come on.
Only if it's metal. See, they only need metal. They took his baseball bat.
Yeah.
Yeah, his precious baseball bat. And what kind of baseball bat is that? Well, let's go to sponsorship corner.
Easton, Louisville Slugger. I don't know.
I don't remember actually. I think it was Easton. Yeah, it's Easton. Okay. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Batteries Not Included is brought to you by Dresser Bulldozers, Chevrolet and Ford, Minolta Cameras, General Electric, JVC, Toshiba and Panasonic Electronics, Maxwell Cassettes, Maxwell House and Nescafe Coffee, Pepsi and Slice, Nabisco, Clabber Girl Oil, Legs Pantyhose, Salem Cigarettes, McDonald's Restaurants, Nike, Easton, and Everlast Sporting Equipment, SOS Pads, Tidy Bowl, Tide Detergent, Windex, Forbes Magazine, and Wurlitzer Jukeboxes. Plus the probably fictional McDermott, Lacey Incorporated, Moss Movers, Randolph Farms, and of course, Riley's Cafe. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
I kind of forgot there was that many names in there.
Yeah. Well, once they get to Times Square, that is
Oh, there you
where
go.
it's definitely a different story. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of those electronics were just ads that were in Times Square. And same with McDonald's, yeah.
Of course.
So now the love story that I don't quite understand is the Mason Marissa love story. Because they seem to get awfully, I don't know, like intimate looking he's like kissing her on the cheek the first day that, you know, or kissing her on the head or whatever. Like, just a very, romantic, loving gesture that it's like, okay, your girlfriend just left. She's pregnant with some other guy's girl.
I was gonna say, like, I mean, do we ever really figure out what that situation is? Like, from what I recall, the guy ends up just calling her and telling her, like, he has to stay somewhere else for, like, a job.
Yeah.
And we're just meant to assume, like, oh, he's just not coming back.
Yeah, he's a musician.
And maybe he never was coming back yet.
Yeah.
But then he does.
He dies?
Oh, no, I said he does.
Oh.
I didn't think he would either, but he did.
Yeah.
My bad.
Maybe that's so that it doesn't seem as bad because you know that they had a talk. And so there is closure to the relationship instead of her just pining for this guy that may one day come home and find not only all of these pictures of Mason, but Mason himself in her apartment. You know?
Yeah, that whole thing seems so forced and, I don't know, just unnecessary. And just, I also just kind of didn't feel like the chemistry was there.
Yeah, it was a bit of a mess, I suppose. It just, it felt to me weird that they were already feeling very relationship-y, even in the way they were arguing. Where it's like, did you know her name before this week? Like,
Had you guys ever talked to each other in the hall or like?
Yeah. Have you ever had an exchange more than, oh, hey, that's what I think really threw me off about it, too, was, the fact that I think you guys just met, but you're all coupley, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really, to be honest, could have done. I think you needed a larger group just for Harry to make sense. But I found that Marissa and Mason, whenever they were on the screen, I just felt like this is just filler.
Yeah. Like, these people are not needed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mason has the whole approach of he's trying to save the building from a historical, you know, side. So he's trying to find the loophole that's going to save the building in a way that...
Mm-hmm.
But it also... It strikes me as the same sort of situation between him and Frank. Do they know each other? Does he realize that Mason is trying to do all this extra work for him to, you know, like, save the building another way? It seems like maybe you guys should connect at some point and, you know, try to figure out this problem together. Yeah. Bit of a conundrum not having a home.
Yeah.
Maybe I wasn't paying attention enough, but I kind of felt like once the aliens arrive, the like plot line of like trying to save the building is a little bit lost and it becomes more about like the aliens. Whereas sometimes I kind of wish that I felt like this movie was just all over the place.
Yeah.
With what I was supposed to be paying attention to and what was important. Mm-hmm. That it was kind of hard to care about anything at the end of the day.
I suppose so.
Yes.
Oh, man. See, I came into this one so positive where I'm like, it was a sweet movie. And now it's just like, wow. Like, there's...
It still is.
There's so many problems with this movie. Well, shit. You know?
It needed to pick a lane and like go for it.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to be like, weirdly, for a movie that doesn't do much, I felt like it tried to do too much.
Like... You think so? Because I thought the timing was actually kind of perfect in a way.
Well, what would you have done? So you just wanted the invasion movie, like, or what would you have done differently with the story?
I wasn't paying close enough attention, but I really didn't understand the relationship between these people and the aliens.
Okay.
Like, I would have liked to see more. I mean, obviously the aliens didn't talk, but like more of like getting to know you period between the tenants and the aliens, where they kind of are like feeling each other out and trying to like figure out what each other is about. Like, I didn't understand why the aliens even care for these people.
Okay. They
other than like
they montaged over it a little too much for you.
Yeah, they must have.
Well, because that is kind of where you get any of the story of them feeling each other out is, yeah, they're, you know, now you've got the montage of them working in the diner all of a sudden. And so, yeah, they just kind of do breeze through that, where you would have liked to have lived in that a bit more.
Yeah, like I remember them kind of showing up. And then just like going, like people go, them going like back and forth on the chicken coop, yeah, and all that. And then, the robots have the babies.
Yep.
And that's where kind of the movie starts.
Yeah.
And then everything from that point on, I'm like, okay, like sure, they were there and they helped you. Like they brought your little baby back to life and they helped you out and made, but everything before that, I was like, I don't know how we got to this point.
Yeah. Okay. So it's almost like the story could have been better if it wasn't someone trying to force them out of the house, right? Like,
with that, I also feel like the stakes, even though you have what should be the highest of stakes, like these people are trying to force you out of your house, you kind of have this you have this weird absentee villain.
Yeah.
Who's never like really a looming force?
You think because down it just seems himself
because like
the
premise is almost like as long as these people don't leave, they're just really not going to do anything about it.
Yeah,
like you needed somebody who was like a little bit more evil or like to be like a true bad guy coming in to like, I don't know, just like antagonize them a little bit more throughout, because Carlos really doesn't hack it, because sometimes he almost seems like he sympathizes with them, or he's one of them. You don't really buy that he's
this evil guy.
Yeah, he pulled Faye out of the fire when just a couple days before he wanted to hit her with a baseball bat.
That's right.
I mean, yeah.
But see, that shows growth.
I mean, that's nice of him. But...
yeah, exactly. Can't show that he's all bad. These people are growing on him. That's
yes.
The charm of the Riley Cafe.
There you go.
I don't know. I don't know that that's true. Because, I mean, he definitely doesn't want to commit murder.
Yeah.
But it was his idea to break the gas lines.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But the guy with his weird balloon contraption was there already.
Yeah.
What? How is that supposed to make it look like an accident? Oh, they were having a party down here in the electrical room.
I don't know.
Like,
yeah, I didn't really understand that at all.
Yeah.
That like, was odd.
Beats me.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way to set up a timer. Like, I don't know whether he was trying to cover anything up.
Maybe the robots also needed a bad guy too. Like maybe there needed to be some weird like egg snatching robot that was after them to come steal their babies that the apartment tenants also had to defend them from.
Oh well, see that might have been what was. See, maybe instead of them being forced out of their, or like maybe they were like had 6 months to evict the house and they were trying to find a way to save it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then this whole other story starts happening around them that, like you said, yeah, maybe they have to protect the aliens. Give them sanctuary.
Right.
Like, what if the aliens just called all their pals sooner and just fixed the whole place up like they did at the end?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it would have been no question they wouldn't have been able to knock it down because you have this, like, rejuvenated building. And then maybe the aliens just live there.
So... okay, I've always wondered this about when it comes to restoring anything. Because, like, I watch some of these restoration shows where they unscrew it down to nothing. And then, you know, clean it all up and put it all back and half of the pieces aren't original. Is it still a historical site when it was, like, basically a pile of rubble and they rebuild it? Like...
I think if you're going to restore something and have it maintain its historical integrity, you have to use like the same type of materials and it has to maintain the same like facade and that kind of stuff. So you can kind of like modify the interior a little bit, or like if you need to like bring it up to code or like improve the electrical so that it doesn't, so that it's not going to like burn down and that kind of stuff. But it still has to fit with like, it has to be as much of like the original structure as possible. I think it, like in this case, if something burnt to the ground,
yeah,
I don't know that if you like rebuild it, if it's still a historical structure.
But but they would have probably used the same like bricks and molding and everything, because that's what the rubble was, right? So does it count then? Like, I genuinely wonder this when I see a car stripped down to its chassis, and it's like, just because it's the chassis of a 55 Mustang, does that mean that it's still a 55 Mustang? Once you put it all together, if, you know, they're not all original parts.
I'm sure there's like some port, like some percentage of the original building that has to be maintained. Cause I just like the Notre Dame Cathedral, like burned down, like what, like almost,
yeah,
kind of like 10 years ago.
Yeah, close.
Like
to.
Not all, not like obviously didn't all burn down to the ground, but like a good portion of it was destroyed. And I mean, that building would, I would assume, would still maintain its historical
maybe because
significance
the,
and status.
Maybe because the stoop in the entryway was still there, because Harry was sitting on that at the end. Like, is the stoop that is like, oh, well, 5% of the building's still there, so that's the magic percentage is a stoop.
I'm curious about, like, the methods of these robots. Like, I don't see how they're accomplishing specifically this rebuild of the apartment building without making a few trips to Home Depot.
Yeah.
Because
they're obviously Amish.
Clearly.
I mean, they build a barn in 10 hours with 30 people.
They build a baby out of soda cans, right? Just scraps that they find lying around. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, how do you... Like, I could get, like, yeah, sure, all the bricks are there. They could use the bricks and, I don't know, clean them off somehow. But, like, when it goes back up, the building is, like, noticeably, like, I don't even think it's the same facade. It's, like, kind of green now, whereas before it was more of, like, a stone building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a fresh coat of paint on it and everything like that, yeah. Yeah, where was the trip to Home Depot, like you said?
The funniest thing to me of the burning down the apartment building thing is, like, the scene where you can see the walls come down. It's, like, clearly just, like, a box-framed, like, building. Like, the way it peels off, it's, like, you can see that it was just, like, they just built, I don't know, some hollow structure and burnt it down or whatever.
Yeah, what I did read about this movie for location, yeah, they scouted some place in New York that was just basically just a big construction site, and they built a three-wall facade for the building. So, yeah, I guess they built the or burnt the actual thing down then. That must be what it is. And didn't expect it to collapse quite like that.
Yeah, like just the way it falls, like it literally like bends in half like a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
That's true. That thing probably should have been condemned. I mean, if it's going to collapse like that, I think it was probably a good thing that it burnt down on them. Yeah. Yeah.
Rather have it that happen than just it happening on its own.
That's true.
One day.
I wonder if the robots rebuilt it without the asbestos.
Did they build it up to code at least? And I mean,
Inspector will see that.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're taking like some liberties, because if they are changing the facade slightly too, it's like, well, how do you guys know whether that's, you know, what it was supposed to look like? Because that's not what it looked like beforehand. Did you see historic photos? Oh, I guess they saw historic. That's all the photos we saw in the credits in the opening. See, they saw what it originally looked like.
What was the deal with Harry chipping off the... Was he replacing the tiles, or was he...
Yeah, he was...
just have a thing where he was chipping off tiles on the floor?
No, he was the maintenance guy, so he was replacing all the tiles. and painstakingly one by one. I mean, that would have been the best, as if at the very end they had left just a little bit of tiles for Harry to finish.
Mm. Yeah.
They had to make it perfect. We do at least find out with Harry, though, that ultimately he's the only smart one when it comes to tracking robots. Because mm-hmm. everyone else is like, whoa, where'd they all go? And Harry's the one that's like, well, there's three holes in this wall over here. That's probably them. Would a dog whistle in a with a megaphone actually work, do you think?
That's a good question.
I don't think so.
No? I do like the touch that that one dog just starts following him everywhere, though, because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think if a dog whistle would work. I feel like
a megaphone wouldn't have a good enough like sound system. Yeah, like or how speaker? Would you? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I feel like it probably still wouldn't be loud enough for a human, but for a dog, they'd go nuts. Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I just feel like it's all on frequencies, right? So wouldn't using a megaphone actually like defeat the purpose?
Because the megaphone, I don't think is going to transmit at the same frequency.
No, I don't think it will. Yeah, maybe. I don't think the speaker's maybe not good enough. Yeah.
I did like. Well, I mean, this was another thing in the relationship between the robots and the tenants.
Okay.
The robots are clearly pissed after the one takes the axe to the face. Yeah. And they're like. And it seems to me like they're blaming, like, the Rileys and company for what happened.
Humans in general, maybe?
Or humans in... But, yeah, so if they're blaming humans in general, then that tells me that, like, there was never really a connection made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a dog that has turned on its owner, and you're never going to get that dog to love you again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, trust seems to have been broken there.
Yes.
Because they can't even do anything to help her, like, repair him or anything. Is it Harry that saves the day then? Like, is that what we've got going on? Because he brings the kids back, even though he almost doesn't let go of them?
That or him sitting on the stoop.
Yeah.
My takeaway was, like, in the end, they just were so grateful to Harry for, like, saving their one little kid that they decided, like, hey... We'll forgive, yeah. And we'll help you guys out.
Yeah,
we were going to invade.
Yeah,
not all humans are bad. Yeah, like maybe what actually happened is they did bring their buddies back to like raise hell, but then they saw sad Harry there. They're like, oh,
we can't hurt them now.
Just like the Grinch, the robot's heart grew 10 sizes that day, and they thought, hey, let's help this brother out.
We're not going to kill all humans. Well, there we go. That is batteries not included, or asterisk batteries not included. Now, Colin, Frank, on IMDb, it scored 6.6 out of 10, has a Metascore of 54. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 67% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 64%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like an axe to the face of a little tiny UFO robot, hit us with some reviews.
All right, I'm going to start with the review that most captures my feelings on this movie. And it's from Gene Siskel.
Oh, here we go.
And he says, this film is so harmless, it's boring.
Wow. That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the whole newspaper column. Wow. Okay.
I'm sure that's just the summary. I will say that like funny. I was like interested.
Barely a headline.
Yeah. I was super interested to read the reviews for this movie because I clearly don't get it. Most of them, I think, are in line with Sean, where people just talk about how this movie's so heartwarming, what a wonderful family film, blah blah blah, it's the sweetest apple pie, and I'm like, okay.
Anyways,
Imperial S gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "You'd have to be missing a heart not to like this one. This movie is full of so much love and innocence, one can't help but be moved by the performance, most notably Frank and Faye. I like how the movie is brave enough to make a story about a struggling elderly couple that showcases a character suffering from dementia. I can't think of a modern movie that's done the same. After 35 years of the Fixits, the Fixits are still captivating on screen." I guess that's what they call the robots. "Seeing them fly around is a wonderful special effect that holds rather well. I can't imagine today's modern effects being able to pull off the charm these little stop-motion characters are on screen. And the puppetry only adds to the fun. Although the film feels like an 80s sitcom, it makes for a fun, family-friendly sci-fi film that's heartwarming and entertaining, and there aren't too many films out there that fit the bill."
What was the one quote in there about the "there isn't a film today about dementia"?
He likes how the movie is brave enough to make a story about a struggling elderly couple that showcases a character suffering from dementia.
Okay, but he says no one has done that since. I would like to argue The Notebook.
All right, yes.
There you go.
Boom, roasted. I don't
know. Theodore M. says 2 out of 5 stars. "I liked it as a kid. Wanted to rewatch it as an adult. What a struggle. Not worth my time, but not a lot to hate either."
Okay.
Well, that's Lacey. Yeah. Lacey said that.
Scott R. says 2.5 out of 5 stars. "As a kid, I was enamored, but that hasn't lasted."
Oh.
I love how all the bad reviews are like 2 sentences. Or a sentence. Except this one. Cameron F. says 2 out of 5 stars. "Flying robot saucers help an old couple save their apartment building from ruthless developers. I couldn't help but feel sorry for Cronin and Tandy, who are such a delight in Cocoon, labor their way through this muddled mess that seems too much like an adult version of Short Circuit, another robot comedy from the previous year. This movie is way too long and uninspired to entertain the youngest of families, and too hokey to appeal to the grown-ups."
Ooh. Yikes. Well, I warn you, Colin, Cocoon is coming soon on my wish list, so.
All right, that's all we got.
Yeah, we'll see if Cocoon holds up the same way, because, like I said, I came into this one feeling that, you know, it was everything I hoped it would be, because, like, I remembered it so fondly from my childhood, and then talking about it, it's like, okay, maybe it wasn't that great. Maybe I was just watching it shiny. You know, it was still, I couldn't rub that shine of my childhood off of it. So I think you guys have talked me down a bit. So we got 6.6 and 64 out of audiences and 67 and 54 out of critics. I think the mid-60s is fair. I still like it. I think it's sweet. I think it's heartwarming. I thought that it pulled at heartstrings where in certain places you feel for robots in a way that WALL-E has done, you know, things like that. I always like when you can bring heart to an unexpected character like a flying saucer. I still like the joy of it, but yeah, I'm not going to come in here and say it's the greatest movie ever, but I am so glad that I revisited it because it still got me in the feels here and there, and you know, I still enjoyed it for the hidden gem that I think a lot of people don't realize it is. So let's go over to Frank. Frank, you know, we've got a movie full of Franks. What did our Frank think of Batteries Not Included?
Before I say, I do have to warn you. You mentioned how you looked back on the film good and now not so much. I think that's how our Crow review went, and we all know how that went. So we got to keep that on the down low. Anyway, I'm not going through that again. Anyway, now, like I said, you know, I came into this movie completely fresh, you know, not knowing anything about it. And I will be honest, it wasn't bad. I'll admit, you know, it was heartwarming. It was a nice story. Sure, it could have been complex at times. And at least the visual looked really good, especially considering this was, what, 87? Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah,
I mean, I was thinking back then, if you're watching it, you're probably thinking, wow, that's a real flying saucer on there. But yeah, I thought the technology looked good. I thought the acting was pretty good. I think Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy did very well, along with all the other actors.
Yeah, special effects, I feel, are something that we actually didn't give enough of a shout-out. I mean, they did hide a lot of them very well by, like, having things like hiding them in a flying saucepan instead, you know, so that you could do stuff like that. But, yeah, 87, they did pretty good. A few of them are wonky. The only thing that actually really got to me out of all the things was, like, some of the building stuff, you know, at the end when they see you see the building between the skyscrapers, it's like, oh, okay, that's not the best matte painting. Or when they're first on the roof and realizing that something's in the chicken coop, you can totally tell that's a soundstage sunset in the background. But the robots, they did okay. Pretty good for 87. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, to me, it was an all right movie. Like, if I'm in the mood for a movie, am I going to instantly reach for it? Probably not. Yeah. But it wasn't bad.
Okay, Colin, you know, Frank's a little positive about it. Let's see if you are. What did you think of Batteries Not Included?
I think this is a movie that only people who watched it as kids and Frank will like. Yeah, I don't get it. I think that, like, I mean, obviously, I was one when this movie came out, so I don't know what I would have thought of it as a kid. But, like, I don't see the draw. I don't see what's interesting about it. I will say that, like, the interactions between Frank and Faye and their story, I really like. I almost, like, feel like in an alternate universe, I would have just loved the movie. Like, Someone described in a review that this movie is like amazing stories, and that's kind of the feel that I get. Like, in a shorter time frame with a more like condensed story that just was around Frank and Faye, and even like just lost the robots really, or like used them differently.
Like, I think the last people in the building almost.
Like, I think they're real. Like, I would just love to see in an anthology a story about Frank and Faye and like just coming to terms with the death of their son. That's like that's the most interesting piece of this whole movie to me. Mm-hmm. But extrapolated out with adding everything else that's going on, I just feel like this movie feels diluted, and Siskel said it best. Like, I found it boring. I just was like, nothing interesting is happening here.
So the, to me. For you, the interesting stuff was in the wrong movie.
Yeah.
The most compelling stuff was in the wrong movie. Okay. Okay, fair enough. So, not a fan. Well, right on. There we go. That is Batteries Not Included. And that's our show for this week. A big, huge thank you to our special guest, Frank Driscoll. Frank, we always love having you on the show. I forgot to do a tally. We got to be on like 7 or 8 times that you've been on here now. Or we must be creeping in on double digits.
I want to say 7.
7?
It all started with Blade. I think Blade, Crow, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
And Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers.
The Rundown.
Rundown, right.
Scrooged.
Scrooged. Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
I think 7.
Well.
Yeah.
One more time, Frank, for the 7th time then, tell people where they can find you or, you know, anything that you want to plug that you're into.
You know, I do want to point out I'm still waiting on my 5-timers club robe.
Oh, shoot. I thought I sent you the tracking number on that.
Look, I'm not sure how the mail internationally works here because I don't know much about it, but it could be some, I don't know. Anyway.
It's gotta be the problem, yeah.
It's fine. You can make a new one. Well, I don't have much to promote. I was in a really cool fantasy audio series recently, and my episode just came out not that long ago. It's called Last Call at Bluebell Cafe. I played the role of Malcolm in episode 9. It's a fun little project I did. You could check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you live in the West Contra Costa County area, you can catch me at Up and Under Pub and Grill every Tuesday night at 7, where I host Trivia Night. It's a fun little quiz we do from our friends at King Trivia. If you have a brain and you're willing to brag and show it off, come by.
That's the best tagline ever, if you have a brain.
Damn it.
I don't have a brain. Rats.
I guess I'm disqualificated.
Poor Scarecrow.
Sorry.
No Scarecrows allowed. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell people. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to find an audience. You know, just telling someone will go so much further than even 5-star reviews. But that's another way you can help us. Go on to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some reviews. Give us 5 stars. Help drive us up the charts with science and algorithms and all that sort of stuff. It really does help the show get noticed. Or if you want to go even further beyond and you want to donate to our sorry asses, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of the Patreon family, you know, and contribute to the show. You become an executive producer, and you even get a shout out like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour podcast.
I've heard recently that you shouldn't just listen to our podcast. You should subscribe to our podcast.
Oh, everyone's saying subscribe. Yes, that too.
Because apparently that matters. So yes. Don't just tell your friends to listen. Tell them to also subscribe.
Or just steal their phone and hit subscribe on whatever app they use. Yeah.
That's a good way to do it.
Exactly. And click auto download while you're at it. so they just lose all their memory. And also check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes. But actually, again, go on your podcast, podcatcher, as the kids say, and subscribe.
That's right.
Go to our website to find links to all our podcast episodes, all our social media pages. And if you want to, send us an email at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. And then maybe we'll throw them by Frank and see if he wants to come talk about them with us.
There you go. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Nice.
Awesome.